Next case, we'd like to acknowledge the presence of some students from St. Mary's Law School, the class of Professor Vincent Johnson. Several of the students are here to hear oral arguments. We welcome you to our court. The next case is number 0503, Joyce LaLue and Monica LaLue versus Hampshire Defendant Independent School District and Daryl Bill from Orange County.
May it please the court, Mr. Dale Hank will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, I'm Dale Hanks from law firm Townsley, Hanks & Townsley in Beaumont, Texas. I represent Joyce and Monica LaLue, who are the plaintiffs below and petitioners here. This is a personal injury lawsuit against Hampshire Finette Independent School District brought under the Texas Tort Claims Act and against one of its drivers, a Mr. Daryl Bill. The trial court granted summary judgment to the school district and to the driver. The Court of Appeals, in a divided decision, affirmed the summary judgment on the basis of governmental immunity, holding as a matter of law that the injury did not arise from the operation or use of a motor-driven vehicle. It's undisputed here that a school district is liable under the Tort Claims Act for personal injuries proximately caused by the negligence of its employees if those injuries arise from the use or operation of a motor-driven vehicle. What's in dispute, however, and what is before this court for decision, is whether under the summary judgment evidence here, Hampshire Finette Independent School District has proven as a matter of law that Monica LaLue's injuries did not arise from the operation or use of a motor-driven vehicle, or whether, as we believe, that is a question of fact for the jury to determine, which would preclude summary judgment. It's hornbook law in Texas that on an appeal from a summary judgment, the evidence that is favorable to the non-movement is considered to be true, and all the doubts are resolved in favor of the non-movements.
Counsel, is it basically your position that since this accident occurred on a school bus, that therefore the accident occurred in the course of use or operation of the vehicle?
No, sir. Not simply because it occurred on a school bus. That is not our position. There are cases, and I've referred to them in the brief, and I intend to discuss them during argument, that hold that simply because an accident occurs on a bus, if the bus merely provides the setting for the accident, but the accident is not caused by, or this does not arise from the operational use of the bus, then the school district is still immune, and the exception to immunity doesn't apply.
What makes this case different?
What makes this case different is the accident arose, well, our position is it arose from the operation of use of the vehicle because
of the parked vehicle, which the ignition was turned off.
Yes, sir. The summary judgment evidence shows that the school district, through its bus drivers and band directors, regularly allow the students to get on and off the school buses through the emergency rear exits. And the summary judgment evidence shows that they knew they were not supposed to do that because that's dangerous. They even had a rule for bus drivers which instructed the drivers to tell the students the safest methods for getting on and off the bus. And the driver in this case, Daryl Bill, admitted he had been trained in bus driving school. He said he's not supposed to let the students get on and off the bus through the emergency rear door because the rear door is it's more than 3 feet high and there's no step up. The only way the kids can get on and off through that door is to crawl up or jump up or crawl down or jump down.
Isn't this more in the nature of a premises liability claim? You're complaining really that the method of egress was dangerous.
Well, no, sir. We're complaining that the school district allowed the students to use that method for getting on and off, and on the very day in question, the bus driver saw Monica LaLue and the other students getting on and off the bus through the rear door. Instead of telling them, as he was supposed to do, that they're not supposed to do that and to stop it, he told them it was okay, you can continue getting on and off the bus through the rear door. Just be careful.
Well, in that regard, isn't this case then pretty similar to the state of Garza case, the stabbing on the school bus down in McAllen?
Well, in the state of Garza case, the bus had nothing to do with the accident. It's just where the stabbing occurred. There was a non-student on the bus, and a fight broke out, and the student was stabbed and died, and another student was injured.
It required the intervention of a third party, did not it? Here you have a piece of school equipment being operated for a school purpose, a school function, carrying students.
Yes, sir.
According to your statement, they were aware that using the emergency exits for ingress and egress was inherently dangerous.
Yes, sir.
Smallness of the opening and not having the proper facility for getting up and down.
Yes, sir.
Had
these
schools... they failed to instruct these students to not use...
Yes, sir.
...what's there for emergencies and not for normal ingress and egress.
And not only did they not... Not only did they fail to tell them not to do it, the bus driver actually told them it was okay to do it on the very day this happened.
So the method and manner of its use, there was a dangerous piece of equipment and resulting in injury, that's a fundamental argument.
Basically, we say that the bus is obviously, the use of a bus is to transport students. I mean, everybody can agree on that. Loading and unloading students and the method of doing it, we contend, is part of the transportation process, because you can't transport kids if you don't get them on and off the bus. We contend they were negligent in their methods of getting the kids on and off the bus in the past, and on that very day in question, in telling Monica Lulu and the other students it was okay to do it that way. Just be careful.
You think it would have made any difference?
Sir?
You think it would have made any difference?
If he had told her not to? Well, under the summary judgment evidence, we have to take the evidence most favorable to the non-movements, and in her affidavit on summary judgment, Ms. Lulu said if she had been told not to do it that way, she would have obeyed the instruction and wouldn't have done it. Now, if a jury doesn't have to believe that, obviously, but on summary judgment, we take it as true. So, yes, sir. For summary judgment purposes, it would have made a difference.
Is the door marked emergency?
Yes, sir. I don't know if that appears in the record, but I've seen the bus. I believe it's marked emergency. And
it's not one of the normal methods for either entering or leaving?
No, sir. It's clear in the summary judgment evidence, the bus driver's deposition, that it's not to be used except in case of emergency because it's dangerous to go in and out.
Was there any dispute over what the definition of emergency means?
No, sir. Not to my knowledge. The school district did not regularly use the rear doors for all students, but for band students it did.
And why?
I don't know, sir. They just allowed it to happen.
Were their instruments carried with them?
Yes, sir. Sometimes in the main bus, sometimes in the smaller bus. And the evidence shows that not only were the students allowed to get on and off through the rear door, but also they were allowed to put their instruments through the rear door.
The statute refers, as you've noted, to operation or use.
Yes, sir.
Do those terms mean the same thing?
They don't under the case law. Under the case law, and the most recent case addressing it was this Mount Pleasant versus, Mount Pleasant versus the state of Lindbergh.
Right.
Operation has been defined as a doing or performing of a practical work, and use was defined as meaning to put or bring into action or service, to employ for or apply to a given purpose. Now, the bus was employed for and applied to the purpose of transporting students. On the day in question, the students had been transported to another school for a band competition. The bus was there to take the students home afterwards.
But at the time of the accident, the bus was stationary, so the bus was not transporting anybody anywhere.
That's absolutely right. At the time of the accident, it wasn't. Ms. Lulu was getting on the bus because she heard the band students and the bus driver coming. She was getting on the bus to be transported. But what we say is that the statute doesn't require that the school district be operating and using the bus at that particular moment. What the statute requires is that the accident must arise, or the personal injury must arise from the use or operation.
Getting on and off, though, is...
Sir?
Getting on and off the bus is an integral part of its use.
It is, Your Honor.
Transporter, she's not on it.
It is, Your Honor. That's our position. It's part of the transportation process, and the negligence occurred earlier in the day and earlier in the year, but simply because there's a time lapse between the negligence and the injury, that doesn't preclude a jury determining that this was that this arose from the operation or use of the motor vehicle. Many times you have negligence that precedes the accident by some period of time.
Is it your argument that if the bus driver had said, don't use that door, that then this would not be the use or operation of the vehicle?
No, sir.
Well,
we contend...
What does the bus driver saying do or don't use the door have to do with whether or not it's the use or operation of the vehicle?
Well, whether he says don't do it or go ahead and do it, it doesn't matter. It doesn't mean... It's use or operation either way.
I thought you said that with the basis of negligence.
It is.
Well, then it does matter.
Well, it matters for negligence, but it doesn't matter whether it's use or operation, because instructing the students on how to get on and off the bus, whether they instruct them correctly or incorrectly, we contend is part of using and operating the bus.
So but now, under your rule, if somebody just wandered along and tried to jump in the back door of the bus and hurt themselves doing it, that would not be liability from which the state is immune. It might not be negligence, but it wouldn't be immune. It would not be immune from suit in that instance.
Well, if the person who wandered in and jumped off wasn't a student and hadn't been taught or allowed to use or use the rear door to get on and off the bus, then I don't think it would be use or operation as to that person.
I just asked you whether being taught or forbidden had anything to do with use or operation, and I thought your answer was no.
Well, I misunderstood the question, I suppose. Yes, as far as the students are concerned, the school district transports students. Getting them on and off the bus is part of the use or in operation, part of the transportation process. But whether the driver had told her, don't get on the bus through the rear door, or go ahead and get on the bus through the rear door. Either way, that instruction process, part of the training on how to get on and off the bus, is used for operation.
Had she been had she ridden that bus to the place of the accident?
Yes, sir.
Was the door open or closed when did she open it to get back on?
I think the evidence was that the door was open when she got back on it.
The door after the students had exited the bus, the door had remained open, and she got back on, tried to get back on.
Yeah, we don't know whether the door had remained open continuously or not. What happened is she and a friend were sitting in the rear of the bus and then heard the other people coming, alerting them it was time to go. She jumped down and then jumped back up to get in and close the door.
In sort of one process, she got off and then got back on.
Yes, sir. She got down, got out of the bus, and then jumped back in. And as she did, she hit her head in a continuous process of jumping on because it's high. And she stood up as she jumped and hit her head on the top of the bus.
Your argument then would be that if she had broken her leg as she jumped off the bus from that rear door, the school district would be negligent.
Yes, sir. She should have been told not to use the rear door. She shouldn't have been allowed to do it in the past. And under her testimony, if she had been told that and hadn't been allowed it, she wouldn't have done it. Which, again, that's a jury question. The jury may say, well, we don't believe her, but the jury is entitled to believe her.
Any further questions?
She was told to use an obviously dangerous instrumentality, and that carried with it the approval of the school system?
Not the formal approval. The rules of the school district said that the bus drivers are supposed to instruct them in the safest method of getting on and off the bus. Everybody agrees using the rear door is not the safest method and is not supposed to be used. But yes, I guess my time is up, but I will answer
any further questions. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Gonsalves will present argument for response.
May it please the court. The facts of this case are undisputed, and I think that's the reason for the motion for summary judgment. The plaintiff, Monica LaLue, a 16-year-old high school student, rode a school bus to a band contest over in Orange. The bus was owned by the Hampshire Finette Independent School District, which is just outside of Beaumont. She rode over there with a number of other students, plus there were some band instruments. When they got there, they unloaded the band instruments through the rear door because the band instruments were at the back. And they left and went to the band concert. It's undisputed, or at least the Darrell Bell, the bus driver, testified that when he left the bus after all the kids left, the door was closed. The emergency door was closed. Monica LaLue's testimony is that she and another student, male student, came back and opened the door and sat in the bus opened the rear emergency door. The front door was open. When they heard the students coming, they both jumped down out of the bus, out of the rear exit. And the male went to greet the students. For some unknown reason, and she doesn't know why, she jumped back into the bus.
How big a jump were we talking about?
Your Honor, she said that it was over 3 feet, but she couldn't give any better estimate than that. She jumped into the bus, which to me is an acrobatical feat, but she landed on her feet, and then she said when she stood up, her head hit the top of the doorway, and that's when she injured herself. The facts are undisputed that the bus was stopped, it was parked, it was unoccupied until she jumped in, the bus driver was not there, and the front door was open.
Whose fault is it the bus driver wasn't there?
The bus driver said that, I don't know that it's anybody's fault, he said that he was permitted when the students were engaging in the contest, or he was permitted until they were ready to leave, that he was permitted to walk around until everybody was ready to leave. The front door had been left open, so if any students came back and wanted to enter, they could enter through the front door.
Were the students instructed not use the emergency
exit? No. He had said that he had told them that if they used the rear door to be careful, but that they would normally use the front door.
Had they customarily used the rear door on these band trips in the past?
On occasion, they had, Your Honor. But I think
emergency exit is an emergency exit. It's not an ordinary use entrance.
That, I think, Your Honor, is what it was intended. But they apparently, on band trips, because of the band instruments, they would use the back of the bus, use the rear door because it was handy to unload the band instruments.
So they were aware that students used this emergency.
I believe the evidence
routinely for ingress and egress.
But I think that what the court needs to understand is that this, the negligence alleged, and you heard counsel just say, it's two things: permitting her to use this thing, and secondly, not instructing her not to use it. Now that's the negligence. That in their petition, in their original petition, First Amendment petition, Second Amendment petition, they just allege negligence generally. But in their response,
is it possible that a piece of equipment of any kind is being used for a proper purpose, in this case the bus to transport students, that the method or manner of its use, even though it's being used for a proper purpose, can be negligent? Can be dangerous.
It can be, Your Honor.
Impose liability.
If the school district is negligently using it, I think that's the key. Because the school district has got sovereign immunity unless it is operating or using a motor vehicle.
Well, let's focus in on that. Now, it's not your contention that the statute should be read that we define use or operation by whether the ignition's on, is it?
not whether the ignition off, but whether the school employee is operating or using it, Your Honor.
Well, is the only use permissible for a bus to travel?
To transport, you're talking about? No, I think use can include loading another.
What if the school bus driver says, hey, kid, go get on that bus, and it's used to hold the kid? Isn't that
I think that would be a use. Yes, Your Honor.
If the school bus driver had instructed this young woman to go hop on the bus, would that have been a use of the bus?
If he had directed her to enter that way, I think that is correct. He would have used it. But that's not what the evidence is in this case. The evidence in this case...
Must he direct her?
No, sir. He did not direct her. That's the point.
No. Must he direct her?
Yes, sir.
That's my question.
I think...
Because they left the bus open, right, so that the students could come and go.
Well,
on
you
the
cannot
bus.
Lock the rear door. That's the emergency exit. You cannot lock.
No, they left even the front door open. So
that's right. That's correct. So,
but
so
they
the
traditionally,
students,
they had, as they normally permitted them to use that emergency exit in the past.
That's right. It could be, Your Honor. A jury might consider that. It could be. I think it would be a fact issue for the jury.
Were the band students accustomed to getting on and off the bus while they were waiting for their partners to finish whatever they were doing?
I don't know that the evidence addresses that. I think that at times they would get off, some of them wander back. But let me, if I might, because I know my time is, the point of it is that there are three cases that talk about this. The first one is the Hopkins case. And in the Hopkins case is the one where the elementary student suffered convulsions on the bus. And this was by the Supreme Court, this case. And this is what this court held in 1987 in affirming a summary judgment. And they said, that Hopkins argues that the school district and the bus supervisor cannot claim this immunity because the child's injuries were aggravated when she had seizures on the bus. Therefore, she claims the injuries arose from the use or operation of a motor vehicle. Several Texas courts have held that when injuries are not the proximate result of the use or operation of the school bus, but the bus provides the setting for the injury, the actions do not fall within the Section 101.051 exception to immunity. She testified on deposition, and that's the basis of our motion for summary judgment, because she was the only one there. The bus driver wasn't there. Anybody? He said, no driver on the bus, no sir. Engine wasn't running, no sir. Bus wasn't going in there, no sir. So the bus was just where the accident happened. Yes, sir. Now that's her testimony.
Counsel, you're talking about a case that had an intervening cause. The bus didn't cause the convulsions. The bus was not pissed. She'd been standing outside. The other students in the other case, standing outside of the bus, could have had the convulsions. Is that the case where they suffered an injury elsewhere and then the convulsions on the bus?
That's where they suffered injuries elsewhere in the schoolroom. But they alleged...
The United case was an intervening cause. It just happened to be where it took place. It didn't cause it.
All right.
Here, the bus is an instrumentality of the injury.
Yeah. But it wasn't an employee of the school district that directed her or controlled her. And they're alleging negligent direction. That's basically is what it goes down to. And
your position is that if the employee had directed, we wouldn't be here because clearly you wouldn't have immunity.
I think that's
right. But you say it's the failure of the bus driver to direct this or to be involved in causing her to enter that way that's decisive.
I think that is correct, Your Honor, because of this fact that if you look, for example, you look in the Naranjo case.
Well, I'm familiar with that case, but what is it then in the statute that tells you that the school employee has to be involved with use? Why can't the vehicle itself, a deficiency in the vehicle itself, give rise to this? Suppose she'd gotten on the bus and the seat on the bus had collapsed while she was being driven from one location to another. Would that give rise to a liability, or would you be immune from that?
I think we would be immune, Your Honor, because that would arise from a condition. And if you look at the statute, on this thing, it talks about a negligent employee. First of all, the The limit is applicable to school districts. Section 101.051 says, except as to motor vehicles, this chapter does not apply to a school district or to a junior college district. You look at 101.021, that government liability says a government unit in the state is liable for property damage, personal injury, and death proximately caused by the wrongful act or omission or the negligence of an employee acting within his scope of employment if the property damage, personal injury, or death arises from the operation or use of a motor-driven vehicle.
Counsel, if she were taking woodworking and using a bandsaw, and there's a sign above a bandsaw that says, do not place your hand in this area, but the shop instructor says, okay, go ahead, it's okay to place your hand in that area, just be careful. Okay, yet the sign says, don't place your hand, would the school be liable?
No, because the school is not liable for anything except operation or use of motor vehicles.
Why is this not a negligent omission? Who was in supervision and control of the vehicle?
Well, at the moment, nobody was.
No, who was in supervision? I presume that when that driver checked that bus out, he's responsible for it until it gets back. Is that not the case?
I don't know. Well, Your Honor, I don't
somebody
know
that he has to be in charge. They don't just turn them loose to anybody, do they?
No, sir. No, sir. But again, I think that has to be the negligent operation or use. For example,
ingress and egress is a use.
But
you can't go ride a bus unless you get on it, and you can't
understand
do what
that.
You're going to do when
but,
you get
but
there.
But I think
you
it's a difference between whether anybody just gets on the bus or whether the bus driver is supervising the loading and unloading.
Did he instruct all the students to wait outside the bus until he arrived so that he could supervise their ingress or egress?
I don't think he did, Your Honor.
Isn't this a peculiar situation where we have large, cumbersome, bulky band instruments, and they used the rear door of the bus because it was easy to load the band instruments through the emergency door?
I think that's correct, Your Honor.
But he also allowed the students to use an emergency facility for routine ingress and egress.
That's correct. But implied it. He said they were supposed to use the front door.
But you can use the rear door, just be careful.
That's right. I think that's what he testified to. But, Your Honor, I think the thing about it is I think the employee, if she had been under his direction and control at the time of the accident, I think we would have a different situation. But when she voluntarily decides to get into the bus, use the bus, she's using it. But it's her. It's not the bus driver. What they have alleged is negligent failure to direct her on prior occasions. Not on this particular occasion, but on prior occasions. Negligent failure to control or direct her. And the courts have many times said that for example, in Miranda, the instructor was not transporting the students, nor was he the driver of the car, nor did he exit the car and leave the motor running. In fact, the incident occurred, according to plaintiff's pleadings, as a result of the instructor's direction, control, and supervision of the students. Such claims do not warrant a waiver of immunity under the Texas Torts Claims Act.
Was he not, in effect, supervising her by waiving his right of supervision, by wandering off, by telling her it was okay to do it? Is that not an indirect form of supervision? I'm not going to be here, but if you do it incorrectly, just be careful.
Your Honor, well, if that was the case, then perhaps I think it's the Naranjo case. In that case, he let these kids, the instructor let the kids there operate on a motor vehicle while he went off elsewhere, and they poured gasoline in the carburetor, and some student turned on the ignition, and bam, it exploded. Now, he was gone. He should have been there supervising. But the court held, and this Supreme Court writ denied that case, said that, no, that's negligent supervision or negligent direction. And we're not going to allow immunity from liability under that circumstance. Now, and if you look at every one of the cases, if you look at the Hopkins case, the Naranjo case, or the Garza case was the one where some of the students were trying to exit through the rear door of the bus, just like here. Here we have one going in, but here they were trying to get out. and one of the students was trying to prevent him from it, and another, I think it was a non-student, pulled a knife and cut him. And the bus driver was right there on the bus. And they said, that's not waiver of immunity. Now, here he is right there. This is happening on his bus. The motor is still running. And yet they said, no, that's negligent supervision. And we're not going to waive immunity.
If ingress and egress to a bus is essential to its use by the students, is failure to provide a safe means of ingress and egress something that is covered by the statute or by the state?
I don't know, because I don't know that we would have that situation. We don't have that situation here, Your Honor, because the front door of the bus was open, and that's how most of the students got in and off the bus. I don't know. I cannot answer that.
Well, you're not saying that the school district always is granted immunity under the statute if the claim is failure to provide a safe means of ingress or egress?
No.
Ice on the steps, front or back. Immunity or no immunity?
I'm not sure, Your Honor, at that. It would depend upon, I think it would depend again upon whether or not the bus driver was there. Because again, if you look at the statute, it talks about an employee. When here, I think the evidence is undisputed, the bus driver wasn't there.
Well, surely the test under the statute isn't whether the employee is there or not, is it?
Well,
the employee can be negligent by omission just as much as commission can.
Well, I don't know, Your Honor. When it talks about operation or use by an employee, that's the way I read it. I may be wrong about it, but if you read the statute, I think that the three have to coexist.
But under your definition, wouldn't the school system be better off by instructing all bus drivers the moment they shut off the ignition to run and hide until it was time for the students to get back on?
No, I don't. I don't think that would be true.
Couldn't the simple practice of allowing students to use the bus, to sit in, to wait in the shade, or whatever, get out of the rain without the supervisor's authority there, couldn't that be negligent?
I'm afraid I don't have enough facts, Your Honor.
Basically, that's the situation you've got here. They allowed the student. The bus was taken out. The driver was the supervisor's control of it, presumably until it returned to the school, the school garage itself. He abandoned the bus first. He might have been permitted to. The school gave permission to. But he abandoned the bus and let the students continue to use it in an unsupervised manner, allowed them, apparently as a pattern, to use this emergency exit for ingress and egress, knowing that it was inherently dangerous to do so. Now that's a use.
Mm-hmm.
To abandon supervisory control and permit an inherently dangerous use by the student seems to me to raise the specter of tort liability for that governmental entity.
I don't know, Your Honor, because I guess, it would depend upon what the danger is and whether they were just unsupervised using it or otherwise.
Any further questions? Thank you.
Thank
you. The test, as Justice Doggett pointed out, can't be whether the bus driver was there or not. In the state of Mount Pleasant versus the state of Lindbergh, the bus driver wasn't there. He drove off and didn't wait for the little girl to cross the street. And that was the basis of the allegation of negligence. In that case, the court said that because no issue had been submitted on whether this was use or operation, that the plaintiff had waived an essential element of her cause of action, and therefore sovereign immunity did apply in that case. But the point that I gathered from the Mount Pleasant case was whether an injury arises from use or operation is a fact issue.
ordinarily to be decided by a jury unless reasonable minds can't differ. In this case, the justices of the Court of Appeals, which we presume to have reasonable minds, they differ. This is it's a jury question. The counsel for Hampshire Finette Independent School District said in answer to one of the justices' questions here that if the bus driver had been there and had directed her or had allowed her to get on and off the bus, and she had done it right then there would be no immunity. That would be use or operation. What difference does it make if he does that and then leaves and she's injured a little while later? It's still use or operation. It's just a question of proximate cause, whether the lapse of time is so long that a jury couldn't find proximate cause between the act and the result. But as far as use or operation, doesn't make a difference. It is use or operation. The Naranjo case that was referred to is equally not on point. There, the car that was involved wasn't even owned by the school district. They were using repairing cars in an auto mechanics class. They were using the immobilized cars much like they used textbooks. In fact, the Court of Appeals there, towards the end of the opinion, said the car was immobile. It's not even to be considered a motor vehicle for purposes of Section 21.912 of the Education Code. We think reasonable minds could differ in this case, and summary judgment was erroneously granted and was erroneously affirmed by the Court of Appeals. We ask this court to reverse and remand the case as to both the school district and the bus driver for trial.
Excuse me, counsel. Let me ask you, under Section 101.021, doesn't a fair reading of that waiver of governmental immunity contemplate use or non-use of the motor vehicle by the employee, as opposed to the plaintiff only?
Well, it's hard to tell, but in this case, we say our contention is it was used and operated by the employee and by the school district.
At the time the accident happened, it's your contention the bus driver was using the bus?
We're contending that at the time of the negligence, at the time of the negligent acts by the school district and the bus driver, those acts were in connection with how to get on and off the bus.
When did the negligence of the bus driver occur?
That day, around lunchtime, before this happened.
Before they exited the bus?
Yes, sir. It was, as I recall, it was around noontime, and then everybody went over to the stadium to watch the other bands. Yes, sir.
So it's your contention that that negligence continued until the time that Monica tried to jump back on the bus?
The result of the negligence fell in when she did what she had been taught to do jumped up.
What was the negligence of the employee?
The negligence of the bus driver was he was there on the bus. The kids were getting on and off through the rear door. He had been trained, and he had a written rule about it telling them not to allow that to happen, and he said, it's okay to go ahead and continue doing that. Just be careful. That's the negligence that we complain of with respect to the bus driver.
Counsel, don't you think a jury ought to make that determination, not this court?
I certainly do, Your Honor. That's all we're asking. We may not win in a jury trial, but we think we're entitled to a day in court.
Any further questions? We'll take a brief recess.
Thank you.